Animal Sounds, guys.
Woof. Woof, woof.
My God, you need
the
a
sound
shorter
of a rabbit. You just can't hear it.
Rattle, rattle, squeak.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Campsite 2A, 150 yards away from the central fire pit. The Assault Kitchen alters your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative barbecue waves. This warms your meal to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head and a sin flood of hunger out of your belly. Can you feel it? Is it working, Jim? Is it working, Diana? Can you feel it?
Oh, yeah. I got my fuzzy pajamas on. I'm all comfy and ready to go.
But I got barbecue waves in my eye. Ow! Ow!
Yeah, the fuzzy pajamas. It sounds like my hippies, Jason and Mary. But anyway, the Freedom Fiends, just like the Assault Kitchen, is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Too long didn't read version. If you're government, just stop now. Don't even think about it.
Anyone else can enjoy the Freedom Fiends.
Yes, yes. So anyway, I just got back from Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest the other night, and I'm still a little bit geeked up. I know you guys have been hearing about me promoting it, for the past few months. Talked about it quite a bit the last time, at least you and I were on, Diana. And by the way, Randy did make it out there. So we had some libertarians there. We had Randy England. We had Diana Kyler, as well as...
I really like Randy. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome in person. So, yeah, real good time. Go ahead.
This idea of, the festivals and stuff, to me, it's a really interesting opportunity to show community. Community as an alternative style to, where you get to basically play out your fantasy community, right? Because, there's no real anarchy in existence right now. But you have these anarchy festivals, and then you get a bunch of people who get to go out and actually play out their dream society.
Right? Well, actually, anarchy is all around us. If you look at how most of our lives operate on a daily basis, the government boot isn't generally standing in the corner at all times. I mean, it might be in the corner, but it's way in the corner, and it's not really getting involved in everything that you do.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, if you look at your interactions with your neighbors, your friends, your family, most of that is anarchistic because there is not a cop standing over you with a billy club raised saying, hey, you better act right or else.
I made almost all of my decisions all by myself today. I didn't have a gun in my face one time. I was able to decide what to wear. I decided what to eat, decided where to go. It was very anarchistic.
Really? I thought you were married.
Nice one. Don't you think people, when they hear anarchy, they think antisocial? Right?
Well,
these are social events you're doing.
Yes, they are very social events. A good way to explain it is everybody that was there was invited. Nobody was there under threat of violence or compulsion or anything like that. And when you have a community and not communism, meaning statism, people have a tendency to be of a much warmer personality, much more outgoing. The fact that everybody there was... anarchist, libertarian, voluntarist, abolitionist, whatever you want to call them, shows that they do have some common bonds there. There might be somebody who's a bit on the left side, or you might even have what would be considered right-wing libertarianism, the anarcho-capitalists, but they all get along. And I think one of the things about community is somebody just pulls in and they're looking to select a campsite, and somebody will say, well, you know, over in the orchard, that's a family area, so that's quieter at nighttime, and there's probably gonna be some kids making noise and stuff like that, getting up early in the morning, because that's what kids do, is they get up early, make noise, and they're more relenting than the most unrelenting alarm clock. But anyway, so And then people show up and help put up tents and everything else. And it is a very friendly, warm atmosphere. And something else that a lot of people may not understand is when people meet each other for the first time, when they greet each other, it's very warm greetings. It's very, there's a lot of excitement in there. And as an example, when Jim and I met for the first time at Pork Fest, handshakes, I don't know if we hugged each other, but it's not entirely uncommon at these type of events for somebody to hug somebody that they'd never even met in real life before. Maybe they only knew them from the computer.
It's really interesting, actually, when you meet people that you've only known on the internet. In England, they do this a lot more. I used to go to forums a lot, and now forums is like, oh, how old are you, right? But back in the day when they were really big, I spent a lot of time on forums, and they would have meetups in the UK, which didn't really happen in North America so much. And people would go there. And, you know, I tend to just blurt things out and say things that are very unpopular and so on, right? I had people going there who wanted to hate me. And when they met me in person, they're just like, you know what? I just can't. It's like, you're kind of awesome. And you just, like, when you talk to people online, I don't know, I think because of the anonymity and the chance to be the ultimate you that you want to present, I don't know, people just accentuate all these things about themselves. You don't actually know anybody until you meet them in person. And sometimes even people that you want, actively want to hate, you end up kind of going, no, you're all right. And which is interesting about the internet because, you know, there's so much talk about the dark side of human nature that comes.
It's true. You know, I just recently had an interesting experience where I met a restaurant owner and we discussed my Yelp review.
Oh, that's great.
It was really funny. And I had also had a Facebook review. This restaurant here in Maine, where I am right now, I'm with some friends in a bar, and we're drinking, and we're discussing beer and stuff, and there's a guy at the bar, and, you know, we're talking, and he goes, oh, you ought to go to this restaurant called Blaze. You know, and I was like, oh, that's horrid. He goes, oh, well, that's my restaurant.
Well, that was a little shameless self-promotion of his own there. He just got busted, right?
So I'm like, and my friend's like, oh, are you the chef there? He goes, no, I'm the owner. And I was like, wait, were you the, I asked him, I said, are you the guy that like replied to my Facebook review accusing me of working for one of the competitive restaurants? And he goes, could be.
I love social interactions. I'm not very good at them because, like, I'm not good at small talk and stuff like that. I don't know if
The funny thing is we had been talking to this guy for like half an hour, 45 minutes before this came up. So, you know, it was just funny because I had really slammed him in these reviews. Like, just like, you know, Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares came up and, you know, it's just horrible.
I find those cooking shows so fascinating, just like the intensity around food and stuff, right?
But then this guy had a lot of personal pride. But anyway, this was an online interaction, and now we're discussing it in face to face. And you know, and the funny thing, what actually I give the guy a lot of credit the way he handled it. What he ended up saying was, you know what? I want you guys to come in for a free meal tomorrow night. Here's my text me. Tell me when you're coming in. I'm going to set you up with a free meal. You know, and you know, I thought, you know, that's a good way to handle it. Like, if I had a client that was being publicly dissatisfied with my product, right, you'd really want to turn that around. And that seemed like a good way to do that. So, but of course, I didn't go get the free meal because the restaurant was terrible.
Yeah, I had actually a place when I was working in film, I had to buy supplies from this one local place, and it was the only place you could get certain items from. But because I had I worked on a show where I ordered large volumes, I knew what her prices were because I could order it from her supplier. So I'd walk in there and I'd be like, I can't believe you're charging $100 for that. It only costs $35 when you buy it. That's more than 100% markup, right? And she was just like, basically what her decision on how to deal with me, every time I walked in, she became my personal attendee at the store.
Good stuff.
Like public conversations today, like, have you ever run into happy police? you know, people in the public, you think it's a big deal if you don't look happy enough for them and they have to criticize the way you look. I know this is going to relate to what we were talking about somehow, but I had somebody come in today and basically say to me, you look like you're asleep. I was like, well, I'm not. I'm actually, in fact, wide awake. And he's like, well, you look really tired. And I'm like, that's just my face. You're just basically insulting my face.
Right? Is this a someone you know or a stranger?
No, it's a stranger.
Wow. And,
I know. But it's really bizarre dealing with people in public sometimes. And the way this relates is talking about communities when they get together and how you represent yourself. And we all want to, I think what happens with stuff like these festivals too, even if they're like a leftist anarchist or they're a right anarchist, anarcho-capitalist, they have a common enemy, right, that binds them together. And so you can have your differences and still get along and still, you know, bond over that. But I find it really interesting to think about what happens once that familiarity, like you get familiarity and the common enemy becomes less prescient, you know, and then you get all kinds of interesting social problems that evolve that I want to get into talking about tonight in terms of, you know, liberties and expectations of social treatment and things and how to deal with beefs you have with people. So you go to these festivals, and one of the questions, because I've never been to one, is do you have, like, outcasts that show up, and everyone's kind of like, yeah, they're kind of a loser, right? Nobody talks to them? Or is it really
Well, these are libertarian conferences, so that's everybody.
Yeah. You're all outsiders.
As far as outcasts from the group, like, let's say somebody who's done something that was particularly unsavory or, I don't know, people just, you know, don't want to deal with them because they're just being Richards or being, you know, just jerks, whatever. There's not a whole lot of that happens, but in the couple of occasions where people were unable to play nicely with others, they were shunned and they were, I don't want to say cast out, but, now, they didn't come back. They didn't feel welcome. So, but anyway, you're welcome to come back right after this trip to the market.
Rooms.
Rooms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Do they have trigger warnings first?
Always the trigger warning on the Freedom Fiends. To us now, you've been warned. We are back. So we were talking about the festival. These are really fabulous. I really have to try and make it out to one of them.
Yes, you do.
To get a sense of, you know, the community and the bonding and stuff like that that happens outside of, like, that's one of the things with the way people think in terms of politics and whether or not we need a government. A lot of people, you know, think about, well, people have such a dark side, it needs to be controlled, right? But they're looking at behaviors and they talk about, like, you know, all the criminals in jail right now, and they're only seeing people as they exist within the current system, right? So if you take people out of that system, you might find you're looking at an entirely different animal.
Probably.
Can we say we know human nature at all? Because we've never seen free people.
We've seen different degrees of domesticated house pet, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the question is, when you get all these happy free people together in their own communities where they can have anarchy, at least for the weekend and stuff, how long does that last? Is it like a marriage that goes bad after 2 years? You've got your leftist anarchists and your right anarchists and stuff, and they can all agree to get along for, the goal. But if you were to eliminate the state and it's just gone poof, like, magic, right? Then do these people still get along, or are they going to, how are they going to deal with their differences?
Well, what you have to look at is the basic underlying principles of the people that are in these groups. And I don't think that you will see it deteriorate because when you look at how the people are, they practice peaceful parenting. They don't yell at their kids and beat their kids and things like that. They try to resolve the issues.
They don't yell at their kids?
Through discussion. Really? No, they actually don't. And the kids are quite well behaved. It's really kind of crazy.
I have a kid. I can't imagine never yelling at her. I mean, when I yelled at her, I'd explain to her later that it wasn't her fault and that it was like I have my own problem, my life going on. Right,
but the goal at least is to not yell, at least for me as a parent, right? Yeah. We don't always succeed, but that's definitely, some parenting styles are just always yelling, and
I would like to always have a good day, but some days you wake up and your hair just looks like crap,
right?
let me give you an example. One of my friends, Katie, was doing a presentation on the nonviolent and compassionate communication. I'm not 100% on board with it because I see it as a little bit manipulative, and I just have some issues with it, and it's been discussed on the show before. I'm not going to go into all the gory details of it. Overall, I think it's a great concept. I just, because I do believe in effective, clear communications. But I think this gets a little bit too sappy. But anyway, as she's doing her presentation, she has a couple of young daughters, and her daughters would come up to her during the presentation and, tug at her dress, like, "Hey, mommy, mommy." And rather than, "Get back in your seat, rah, rah, rah," and freaking out and everything, she would say, "Honey, mommy's doing a little presentation right now. If you could, give me a little space," and somebody would jump in and take care of the little girls and occupy them so that Katie could do her presentation. That's an example of peaceful parenting. In contrast, and this really threw me off, I was at Pork Fest 2014, I think. Yeah, 2014. And there was this family that was set up kind of near where my campsite was, and the mother was just berating and yelling at these kids, telling them how stupid they were and how horrible and awful they were. And I was just flabbergasted to see that at Porkfest, because most of the libertarians that I know practice peaceful parenting, and they use the nonviolent communication. So it just really threw me off to see that. And when I see it out in like the regular world, it throws me off too. It's like, really? So your kids are horrible, but you treat them horrible, and why do you think they turn out horrible?
Because you're probably horrible. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Nothing ruins a kid more than a bad upbringing.
Some of the most intense online communities are parenting forums, actually, where people tell other people how to parent. And even though I think it's, it's fairly reasonable to say that there are principles about parenting that should be universally agreed upon. Oh, people get so upset when you tell them what to do with their kids.
Oh, universally sure. Preferable parenting and more when we come back from this trip to the market.
Williams!
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
We're back. I can tell because of the music.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, post-Liberty Fest edition. Oh, yeah.
I love that music, man. It's such a great, like, feeling to it. I feel like, you know, I'm free when I listen to that music.
And it's all original. Michael Dean did all the music himself, some with his bomb band, some with his one-man group of Right Arm of Wyoming, and... You know, some just, you know, Michael Dean screwing around. Yeah, good stuff.
That is a really cool fact. You know, now I really wish we were back in the 80s so I could be at a live Michael Dean concert with his band in a small venue where you feel really close to them. And, you know, kind of like the festivals are. You're just really
maybe,
close to
you know, people. Maybe we could get like a holographic version of Bomb, like, right? Like... How about that? Like a replay a show as a hologram so you can relive it.
The technology is just rapidly expanding every day. I'm pretty sure we could work this out.
Yeah, sooner or later.
Take everybody to the bomb.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, online personalities versus the in real life personalities. Have you guys found that people are a whole lot different in their online personality, that the internet provides that anonymity where they're more likely to be loud, obnoxious, and boisterous, whereas if they were talking to somebody else face-to-face, they wouldn't be quite as friendly. Or, I'm sorry, they would be more friendly and not as obnoxious.
I think so. Like, my experience on the internet, I go online and I pretty much just say stuff that I normally say. It's, you know, surprisingly, I do actually, because I say some pretty controversial things and I'm pretty blunt. But that really is kind of the way I am in life. But at the same time, my YouTube videos, like, it's really bizarre just talking to a camera. So there is some sort of stylizing that has to go on to make you okay with that. But I actually thought when I was online that because I was just talking like my normal self, that everybody else was too. And I've met a number of people from online, and it's really not the case.
Yeah, I think I'm basically the same. I mean, I'm probably kind of like an arrogant jerk online, but I'm like that in person too. So,
well, I do Facebook like I do fishing. I troll.
Yeah. And I would do that in real life if I could. If I could just, like, walk into a restaurant and, like, drop memes on somebody's table, like, I would do that. But that's...
you know,
I find, like, you know, interactions with people are, for me, really entertaining. Especially, like, if somebody asks me a really silly question. And it's not just like, you know, I'm sorry, but I have to ask you a silly question. They just ask you a question, and then you answer it as simply as possible, and they still don't get it. I'm just like, oh, this will be entertaining. And I actually enjoy the experience of dealing with a stupid person. I actually have a lot of fun with that. And it's not like not just say, oh, I'm just surrounded by stupid people and I feel great. It's like, no, I just find it really entertaining. Like, I enjoy people that way. Whereas, like, communication is actually a massive challenge, communicating with people.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook on a pseudonym. And when I switched over to that... I sort of started thinking, am I going to really change the way that I communicate with other people by having this newfound anonymity? And I made a conscious effort not to do it. I mean, I could have spewed a lot of venom, but that's really not my personality. So I'm just as sarcastic in real life as I am on Facebook, and you know, not a whole lot different from how I am on the radio. As a matter of fact, in real life, every 5.5 or 12.5 minutes, I'll say, and we'll be right back after these messages. So, but yeah, I tried
when
to...
When I worked in film, I actually answered the phone, go for Diana. We had like walkies on the film set, and then somebody would be calling you, you'd say, go for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I actually answered the phone that way.
Oh, wow.
By accident,
but one of the things like the group that I'm involved with, and I'm not as involved as I used to be because I don't live in the vicinity anymore. It's the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, and they are the ones that put on the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. There's a core group of us that hang out pretty regularly, and you know, we don't live in a hippie commune together. You know, which, you know, truth be told, I think we'd rather like it, but yeah, we treat each other with a basic respect. The zero aggression principle is a guiding principle in our behavior, but there will be some, you know, ribbing back and forth, and we do have a couple of leftists in there, and you know, but I, outside of the little ribbing that goes on back and forth, it's really not it's not mean-spirited and angry. It's more ribbing. You know, pointing out the flaws in the other people's utopian beliefs. And when I say the other people's utopian beliefs, I mean the leftists.
Well, one of the things about these festivals, right, if you get any press coverage, you have people from outside of the community who have some animosity towards the community, who are looking for sort of social rejects or somebody they can mock, right? So if you get somebody who's, say, like, you know, promoting the KKK or something like that, or, you know, you get somebody with some sort of extreme viewpoint that isn't about even the subject that's being discussed at the festival, but they'll get all the press. What do you do about that?
Well, with our festival, it's not big enough to get to be press-worthy. Maybe somebody's blog, but the people that would blog about it are there attending because they want to be there attending. So, like, there's one write-up that's come out so far, and that was from libertyunderattack.com. A guy named Shane, he has a podcast, and he was there, and he did a short little show from the fest. I didn't get a chance to get over there and see him in action. I was out doing something. I spent most of my time cooking while I was there. So.
But, you know, Pork Fest has more of that really kind of thing, what you're talking about, where there is press there. See, like this past year, CNN was there, okay, at Pork Fest. And, you know, one of the guys they found, some dude was riding around on an ATV flying a Confederate flag, okay? And he looked like a hillbilly dude, okay? And, like, driving around his ATV, like, woo, I got a Confederate flag. You know, I'm like, you know, and I just thought, you know, oh, there's just another flagget, you know, just some guy. Like, I'm like, you know, I'd never go out of my way to go to him and be like, hey, are you, you know, you look like kind of an idiot by flying a flag here, you know. Confederate flag is still a government flag, right? Like, whatever. And it's like, I don't know what you're trying to, you know, what you're trying to express with that. I don't know. I have no idea what he was trying to express with that, right? But I do know that how that symbol is perceived by large segments of society, and I don't really see that as something that, you know, that, you know, that I would want to be associated with. But of course, he makes it. He's on CNN. There he is. Look, it's Pork Fest. Woo! Here's the crazy guy with the Confederate flag. You know.
Yeah,
it happens.
When it comes to all media reports, it seems like the media finds the goofiest, most lunatic person that they can find, the most ignorant person that they can find, and that's who gets on TV.
Yeah,
maybe that explains why I've had a lot of TV experience. Now that I look and reflect back on that, yeah.
Well, as far as the man on the street stuff goes, yeah, they find the most ignorant person they could find to get a comment from. I call that the Springer effect
of, like, social control, right? So, aside from government, society has ways of, you know, I guess defining who's okay and who isn't okay, and the social pressures, as far as the in group and you know, there's, like, bullying and stuff that goes on deeper levels. But on the surface level, you can kind of justify wanting to suppress some voices because they're going to reflect badly on the group, right?
Well, I think you have to get I try to just get away from that mentality, you know, and stop thinking as a group and start thinking as individuals. And you know what? I don't feel like that Confederate flag dude is representing me, so I don't have to get mad about that. I don't care. If it looks ridiculous on CNN, it looks ridiculous on CNN. It's not my problem. Doesn't reflect. I don't consider that to reflect upon me. I'd like to have a more positive view of the festival, you know, just because I want it to succeed, but I don't attach my own personal emotions to what somebody else is doing. So I think if we can just not even think along that, like, oh, he's making, you know, whenever I hear that, oh, he's making us all look bad. Okay, or he's ruining the movement. You hear, you know, like, you know, that's if
that's
one guy,
thinking.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It is collectivist
totally
thinking,
agree.
and if one crazy guy is really going to damage your movement, then your movement's not very strong, you know. So, you know, Porkfest is a hugely successful event. It gets bigger every year. It's super fun. It's 99.99% awesome people. It just, you know, it's just not a problem if somebody, you know, but there are things that happen. A year ago, for instance, there was a guy with poor gun etiquette. And, you know, and I was kind of thinking like, wow, it's a little, you know, I'm not really too comfortable. This guy was being kind of irresponsible with, you know, with a rifle. And, you know, it wasn't really my place. I didn't really feel it was my place to, like, disarm him, you know. But basically everybody just left, or, like, just left the area where he was. And, you know, I had mentioned it to the campsite host where he was hanging out. Like, you know, that's... You know, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with that. Oh, and it's like, oh, that's just so and so, and you know, it wasn't loaded. It's okay. I'm like, you know.
I had film sets too, actually, where actors had guns that weren't loaded and they'd been safety checked by the props people, but it was really, really bad etiquette to point it in somebody's direction. You know, but
yeah,
but people would do that because
even with a prop gun, right? That's, yeah. But these are real guns, just, you know,
well, some of the prop guns were real guns too.
Yeah. Okay. So I like to, anyway, but so there are issues that come up, you know, where it's like, you know, you need some kind of self-regulating mechanisms. And, you know, and there are, you know, if there was something serious, something like Porkfest, they have security people there. There's, you know, there's I don't know, I guess they report to various situations, you know, but it all works out pretty well, completely voluntarily.
Yeah, I think it's possible to not have to... You know, deal with these people partially.
Well, let's get back to that when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Last segment, we were talking about how the media has a tendency to find the most ignorant fools that they can find for their interviews and to cover. I think that in cases like Porkfest and different types of Liberty Festivals, well, I don't know if there's any Liberty Festivals that are as big as Porkfest that would get media attention. I think that there's a narrative. Strangely enough, before I came to libertarianism, the only thing that I had heard of libertarians from the mainstream media was that, oh, those are just a bunch of crazy kooks. You know, they think that, you know, people should be setting the world on fire and everything else. And eventually, as I started to open my eyes to the lies and BS that comes out of the mainstream media, I found that, you know, maybe I should question a lot of these things that I thought that I knew. But, I mean, at Porkfest, you know, they certainly highlighted some of the more questionable things. Now, with our Liberty Fest, and I have the program right here, I scanned through it during the break, and the types of things that may be somewhat questionable would be, there was a discussion on polyamory, and there was some guy that was talking about 9/11, the facts, and interestingly enough, the only presentation that I went to was Adam Kokesh's, because I was, you know, busy cooking bacon and stuff. But those might be a little bit questionable, because, you know, people say, oh, well, those kooky truthers and everything else, or those polyamorous people that just want to have all these, you know, wild sex flings and all this other stuff. They might look at that.
Those are characterizations of opinions.
Yeah, but things that would not be covered would be, let's see, what do we have here? Stephanie Murphy's yoga class, and Stephanie Murphy did two yoga sessions, and I was going to attend, but bacon happened. But there's a Bitcoin roundtable there.
Bacon is always the priority.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I was going to do so many things, but then I ate bacon. So yeah, there was another one on freedom farming, and that was
bacon
just spreading
the.
Yeah, spreading the message of liberty, so planting seeds of liberty. There was one, finding freedom through entrepreneurship. Let's see. What else we got here? So, different Bitcoin roundtables, different technology type things. Like
it's so frustrating when you plan events like this and you have so many great things going on, and then other people focus on the one bad thing that happened, right?
Right. Right. There was a thing on how to can vegetables and stuff like that. So there was a
whoa, hold on. Now you're getting crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Canning vegetables. Oh, these libertarians are out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. And matter of fact, there was a gal out there. She's into fermentation, so making sauerkrauts and different stuff like that. So she was selling her wares and explaining how to do that. And I did have an opportunity to meet a couple of listeners. I don't think that I met them at Porkfest in 2014, but I know I walked within a few feet of them, and that would be Rick and Melissa. They're from Ohio somewhere, and Melissa was selling her stateless salsa and apple butter and all kinds of other good stuff. I'm a new user of Bitcoin, so I got an opportunity to make my first Bitcoin purchase of some of her stateless salsa and apple butter and chips.
Nice.
Food is such a bonding thing. Isn't that the best way to bring people together is food?
Yeah.
And Bitcoin. You put Bitcoin and food together, and it's a win-win. So yeah,
and commerce. Now, I wasn't planning on vending food at this thing, because I mean, it's just so much work. But since I'm incapable of doing like one portion, like cooking a meal for myself, you know, not having a bunch of, wound up making breakfast for myself and also Christian, Diana, and Randy, and a couple other people that would come hanging around, and made dinner for Christian, Diana, and Randy, and whoever else might come by. So, I actually
gotta have some of your bacon.
Well, there's plenty of it.
I'm obsessed with bacon now.
And on the very last morning, morning, Monday morning, I made breakfast for everybody that was still there. So it was roughly about 20 people. Several pounds of bacon in one shot.
Worms.
Bacon is coming. Game of Thrones. That's a play on Game of Thrones. Winter's coming. Bacon is coming.
Yes. And we'll be back with more bacon in the second hour. Wines.
Wine.
My fellow sheep. Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance.
our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
I'll save you a link to it.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Well, it's great to be with you guys. I'm James Babb, and I'm here with Lou Sander-Fien and Wimes. Diana Davison.
Wimes.
So we were just talking about some of the community dynamics at Liberty Festivals and maybe how you can deal with perhaps something that's less popular than most people would like. And, you know, this also kind of brings me to a link that you had sent, Diana, about online free speech and how online communities try to balance free speech with also the need to sort of regulate conversations and not have it taken over by things they might call hate speech or unpopular opinions. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that article and about what you're thinking there.
Yeah, like I live in Canada, and Canada has a kind of questionable stance on freedom of speech. We have freedom of speech here, but it's got lots of limits, and it is limited by, you know, what they refer to as hate speech, but also anything that people might find offensive. And if you spend much time online, you'll find that you can offend people over the slightest thing. So, in fact, it's becoming more and more difficult to not offend people. Even people who are allies to typically offended people find themselves offending the people they're trying to support, right? So, offense limitations on freedom of speech become extremely problematic. But it's kind of a fun thing that came up in the news recently for Canada. We have a character who goes by the name of Roosh V. He runs a website called Return of Kings, and he is a PUA, or pickup artist. Now, for those who don't know what this is, it's men who specialize in learning female psychology so that they can get laid more often, right?
Okay.
And one of the changing definitions of rape nowadays is that if you've been lied to, that's actually classified as a form of rape. So if somebody lies to you about their profession, if they lie to you about their position, their social status, the amount of money they have in their bank account, then that actually constitutes rape.
Does anything not constitute rape these days to the social justice warriors?
Very, very little, right? So they try to, there's another guy who, his name is Julian Blanc. I believe he was in the news a few months ago, also being blocked from entering countries to give speeches, right? And so change.org is kind of a social justice-y site. I think they probably do a few interesting things, but it's a petition site where you can go and you can petition the government to block somebody from entering your country, which is what they did with Roosh. And so he managed to get into the country, and they had to not disclose the location of his speeches in order to avoid being shut down, right? So this is a guy who's basically just saying, the interesting thing for me when I look at this is there's kind of an assumption that the women who get caught up with this guy, right? Say he's really good at getting sex for himself. There's some, kind of an assumption that he's bad at it. What if he's not bad at it? What if he's going around giving women really great sex? Like,
it sounds like it's really none of my business. What he, you know, but it sounds like it's between him and his partners. I don't even understand why other people are interested in this. I mean, it just seems kind of strange that people would be like offensive. I mean, I don't. Well, I guess I just don't get it.
They were calling it hate speech. They're saying that he hates women, right? I mean, he's probably
sounds like he really likes women.
There's a siren in the background. I hope this isn't really. Yeah, it actually does come across like he really enjoys the company of women, right? But he was trying to be kept out of the country on the terms of hate speech, that he's, you know, he hates women because he objectifies them, right? But it, to me, it's just like the attitude, the perception here is that you've got a guy who is, who really enjoys sex, and they're basically saying that that he's abusing these women. But for that to be true, it means that they're having a bad experience. And what if, we don't know, like, maybe it's not true, but what if this guy is really great in the sack, right? And he's coming to Canada teaching guys how to not just hook up with chicks, but he's teaching them how to give really great sex. We're in a liberated society. That's a feminist thing. They want to encourage women to enjoy their sexuality and not hide it away. And it's really funny to see how vehement people get to silence somebody who offends them for some reason. And almost always you'll find that offense is based on assumptions.
And look, just what a weird precedent, you know, like if once you go down that road, where does it end? You know, like, oh, I don't like the food this chef cooks. We need to keep him out of the country because his sauces have a little too much garlic. You know, I mean,
that's somebody who should be given expedited entry into the country. Too much garlic.
I always try to find the humorous aspects of everything. And for me, the humorous aspect of blocking Roosh, like, what if this guy is actually like really amazing sexually? And by keeping him out of the country, they're denying Canadian women the experience of some really great sex. That's like, that's an oppression of women, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe he does things with maple syrup that no Canadian man could ever imagine. Because we know how you Canadians are about your maple syrup.
I know, we're so proud. I go to work every day on a moose, right?
Yes.
That's my transportation. That's my preferred method of arriving at my workplace.
Yeah, with a couple bottles of Little Bad Blue in your canteen.
Yeah. Aww. They spit. No, that's camels. Moose. You know, I always wondered why mooses was the plural. Don't you think, like, if you have a goose and there's more than one, it's geese, right? So if there's more than one moose, shouldn't it be meese?
Well, the thing that I'm really perplexed by is I didn't know that change.org was international. I thought they just stirred up stuff here in America.
Oh, no. There's lots of, if you ever start a change.org thing, which is a fun thing to do,
I wouldn't get notified
of, like, so many.
Well, you can, if you do go to change.org, be sure to sign my petition for boat loan forgiveness. Okay.
I could actually use that in the near future.
Yeah, I'm just this like crushing really debt of boat loans is just heartbreaking.
Well, I think boats are a good thing because you can go out and see and then argue about who owns it.
Hmm.
How much, like, how strong compared to the land property laws and ownership? Can you actually, like, just set up a boat in the middle of the ocean somewhere and say it's mine?
Sure.
That's the only viable land left that's not already spoken for, isn't it?
Well, in the United States, we have tons of government-occupied land which you could just go and claim because it's no legitimate ownership there. It's available for homesteading. You might be able to get away with it. They might come and challenge your claim, but it's certainly all available for homesteading, just like the ocean is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm probably sounding really silly right now because I'm pretty sure every part of the ocean is already spoken for by a country somewhere.
You know what I'm waiting for is that, like, Pacific, there's like this Pacific trash mass in the center of the, it's just like floating around in the Pacific. It's like, I don't know, it's like the, like becoming a continent of its own. I'm waiting for that to be considered like a protected environment itself.
Don't you think a lot of the laws that we live under right now were designed for a time when you could still, like when America first became a thing, people could, like, run out and put a flag on a piece of land or put a stake on it, right? And they staked their claim. But there was land to stake a claim to, but there's no land left anymore. And aren't a lot of our laws designed on
our laws
taking place?
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like a lot like a personal pronoun.
Wait. Our laws. Put a Satoshi in the possessive collectivism jar.
Well, the principles behind the laws are things that I think are principles. They're philosophies, right?
So no. A lot of the time they're declarations. They're declarations of idiot politicians.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about civil liberties? Are they just are they also just laws that belong to other people, or like do civil liberties mostly protect you against interference from the government? If there was no government, would we have civil liberties at all? Would there be
is a theory. That is a theory that the you know, these so-called civil liberties do protect us from government violation. Does the Kanakistani Constitution have a equivalent to the U.S. First Amendment that guarantees free speech?
Well, do you need free speech if there's no government? Because a lot of people think that free speech is only protecting you against the government silencing you. They don't understand it. And my understanding of free speech is that it should protect you from being silenced by a majority, be it a government majority or a social majority.
Well, like with the U.S. Constitution and the First Amendment, that is supposed to protect people from free speech violations from government, from being censored by government. Just like Chapter 5, Article 67, the North Korean Constitution is supposed to guarantee that government won't stop out free speech or freedom of association. Just like Article 35 of the Chinese Constitution. I can't remember what the article number was for the East German or the Soviet Constitution, but they all have those in there guaranteeing the right to free speech and protection from the government. So,
well, people see it so that if the government becomes tyrannical, that you're going to be able to speak out against them without being locked up for it. Well, but if there's no government, it does freedom of speech matter anymore?
Well, then it's just a private property issue. Like you can still say whatever you want at your house, or in your newspaper, or on your website, or on your radio show. But as soon as you venture into someone else's property and try to restrict their speech, well, now we have a private property violation. We really don't even have to call it free speech anymore.
Well, I've had this discussion about my YouTube channel because I don't block or delete comments on my YouTube channel at all. And I've been criticized for that by saying, well, it's freedom of speech. I want to know who thinks what, right? I don't, you know, if you silence people, they're still thinking it, but they're not telling you. You don't know who's thinking it, right?
Right. And people get kind of mushy-headed.
Private property.
Yeah, let's get back to that after the break, because there is some confusion about does free speech apply to someone else's property?
Good question.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah, trigger warning. If we haven't offended you yet, just hang on. We'll get to you. I'm Jim Babb. I'm here with Lou Sanderfien and Diana Davison. We're talking about free speech, and some people do have this weird notion like free speech means I get to post my comments on your blog. Okay, and I think that's a little confusing for people. But what do you think about that, Diana? Is that were you kind of thinking about questions along that line?
Well, my attitude towards comments, and I get a lot on YouTube. It's known for being kind of a crap fest of
and what is your
and so on, right?
What is your YouTube channel?
My YouTube channel is called Feminism LOL, as in laughing out loud. And I get insulted on pretty much every video I upload, and it's like the vitriol. I actually sent some of the comments to Michael, and he's like, why do you allow this? And I said, well, because I want people to be visible in their attitudes. So my concept of it is this: if you silence people, they get to continue. It's not like you're going to stop them from thinking what they're thinking, but they right. do it in silence. I want to know who's thinking what. So I'm very much in favor of allowing idiots free speech. Because
right. Well, I mean, I'd say that's just allowing them speech. It's saying like, look, this is, well, first of all, YouTube, it's that belongs to YouTube, or I guess, or Google, or who, their stockholders. They sort of give you dominion over your little corner of it on your channel, right? And it's up to you then to decide what you allow in this little space that you sort of occupy, or you know, kind of borrow from YouTube. So just like as if, say, I had a restaurant, you know, if somebody's being loud and obnoxious, I could either allow it or I could ask them to leave for the benefit of other guests and the success of my business. But I don't think there's at any point there's a principle of free speech involved in these in either case. But
in a restaurant, you're dealing with what's conducive to digestion, right?
Right.
So
well, you know,
other issues involved on.
Right,
on
but
a,
you know,
YouTube
on a YouTube channel, people are maybe going
ideas,
to learn about a subject, right? Or read something, or I don't know. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't censor your comments on your channel, but I could definitely see, you know, it's up to the user, just like it's up to the bar owner, it's up to the newspaper owner, the website owner. You know, how you handle that.
I couldn't tell you how many times, by allowing people to say whatever they want to say, I've managed to really, like, show them up for the idiots they are. If you eliminate those comments, you can't then refer to them, right?
Right, and usually they can just hang themselves
the evidence
by what they say.
Exactly.
Right? They can just...
I like to get them talking more. I was like, oh, that's right. A really intriguing idea. Why don't you tell me more about it? That's the best way to deal with them.
Right. But, you know, let's face it, without the government, though, this would all be up to the users. And, you know, for instance, some people would favor like, oh, I really like that website because it's, you know, everybody can say anything and nobody's going to get banned for any reason at all. People say outrageous stuff and people are into that. Okay, great. You know, other people like, you know, I want to go somewhere. I want to get specific information. I don't want a bunch of off topic stuff. I don't like name calling. I find that distracting. I don't have time. Great. You get that kind of website. We can all have, you know, different forums to suit our own personal style and preference. It's not like we have to force one, you know, though these are the list of banned topics. Okay, like presumably, I guess Canada would have. These are the taboo topics. Nope. These are the list of words you shall not mention. Right? That's just, you know, that's
well, classifying
that's insane.
Something as hate speech. I don't think the people who are uttering it actually think of it as hate. They actually think of it as reason and thought, and that's where you need to have a conversation with them.
Right. Well, right. We have, you know, things like the
just call them haters. They're never going to understand what they said. You know, what's wrong with what they said? They're just
right. I'm sure there's some people that would consider freedom fiends to be hate speech because we make fun of politicians and we laugh at the government and like, oh, they're just hating on Bernie Sanders. You know, no, we're laughing. We're laughing with Bernie Sanders. Okay.
Well, there is a site that has, like, you know, Reddit. There's an article that just came out actually today about Reddit and their policy and their changing policies on freedom of speech on their site. Reddit is a really interesting thing. We can talk about this maybe when we have a bit more time, because we're going to get a break soon. But they have, like, and I don't understand Reddit. I don't use it. But it's like they've got all these subreddits of, like, controversial topics, and lots of stuff goes on there. Let's talk about it when we come back.
Cool.
Oh, wow, I just found the flashlight I was looking for.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
So, we're talking about social media, right? And how to deal with vitriol and people who bring objectionable content to your private site. And, yeah, I mentioned Reddit. So, Reddit, being that this is coming from someone who doesn't use Reddit, and I've had people try to show me how to use it, and I just couldn't, I didn't have the patience for it. But it's a social media site for discussion topics, and they create subreddits of topics. And they a lot of social media is actually trying to figure out how to crack down on objectionable speech on their sites that's driving content users away, yeah, and the growing offense industry. And so they had this article that came out on Wired that was written by some of the moderators that work for Reddit. And they said, okay, moderators, we put up with a lot of stuff. We take a lot of heat. We get a lot of threats because people don't like to be silenced. But here's our beef, and here's the issues we're trying to deal with. We have these really difficult subreddits called things like, an example in this article, Fat People Hate, right? This is a subreddit called Fat People Hate. And the entire subreddit was devoted to saying mean things about fat people. And so what they tried doing was deleting those subreddits. And then what they found was that the community that was having fun trolling people to make them angry would then go into all the other subreddits and complain about how they'd been silenced and deleted and so on. Right? So they got clever, and they decided to try and keep the subreddit there, but eliminate a lot of the functions that they had. So they couldn't post pictures, or they couldn't, you know, like, engage in a lot of the functionality that other subreddits had. So they weren't actually silenced. They weren't actually removed from the site, but they weren't able to use it properly, which I think is kind
That's
of a
creative
thinking outside the box, right?
Right.
I used to moderate on a forum. Like, I did this for 10 years, and I was pretty clever about it. I did a very similar thing where I created a sub-forum area. So if somebody was really obnoxious and they were not just saying, like, terrible things or things that were intended just to make people angry, but they would actually go and interfere with conversations taking place, I created basically a short bus. This is what I called it. It was the short bus. And so that user would then be limited. They could only post in the short bus. They could read other stuff, so they'd know what was being said, but they couldn't actually post on any thread other than this, basically.
I've heard that there's some ways of moderating where, like, the person being moderated doesn't even know that they were moderated. It just, people just see less of their stuff, like, automatically, and they don't even realize it's disappeared.
Well, on vBulletin forums, there was this thing that was called Tacky's Coventry. And so the person who was being affected by it could see their own posts, and they would think that other people could see them, but nobody else could actually see what they wrote.
Right.
So to them, they didn't actually realize that they were banned or that they were being silenced. And they just figured that nobody cared anymore. Because with a troll, that's ultimately what they want, is a response, right?
Right.
They want to get people upset. And so if you become experienced dealing with trolls, you have to really, if you respond to them in any way, shape, or form, you have to do it intentionally, not emotionally. And so for the people that they felt were trolling that got put into Tacky's Coventry, they would think that they were saying stuff that everybody could see, but nobody cared anymore. And so they just basically go away because there's nothing in it for them anymore, right? Their whole goal is to get people upset.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I guess that's most of the chaos. And this article about Reddit, and we'll link it in the show notes, it says that the internet is the most free society that we have, basically. It's got the least amount of rules governing it. And it brings out the dark side of people, right?
Okay.
And so, like, you know, it creates a narrative that people are extremely dark. And if they're not governed, if they're not controlled, then the darkness will take over. That's really, to me, when I read it, that's what it's saying. And that's a question. It's not a statement that should be made. It's a question. Are people dark? If left ungoverned, are they going to go into so-called chaos? Are they going to become evil?
You know, with government, they just sign up to be the government. Those people are going to be there. Let's just, you know, the difference is we're not going to give them a badge and a gun and the right to just murder with impunity. So I think that's really the only difference.
Here's a thought. When it comes to the people that are being loud and obnoxious, how many of them are doing so as a response to the social justice warriors trying to shut them down? If you look at the whole brutalism and humanitarian thing that came out, oh gosh, probably a couple of years ago, something like that. I don't even remember when exactly it came out, but I think the brutalists were a response to the humanitarians, the social justice warriors, you know, talking about, oh my God, all this microaggression running around and blah, blah, blah. And the brutalists, you know, really got a lot more brutalist because of, you know, being poked at by the humanitarians.
Yeah. So, you know, I just find that the whole, I guess I'm just too busy to even engage either, you know. I don't know, my eyes glaze over, I move on. I'm not going to get wrapped up in either side.
Well, at what point does the right to be, or the right to not be offended, stop? Because it seems like the simple solution. I generally don't block people or delete comments if it's something I disagree with. Somebody has to get really nasty and drop some really filthy language on one of my things in order for me to block them or get rid of them. They have to really be spewing some pure venom. For the most part, you know, I just, you know, look the other way. But if it's somebody on Facebook, you can unfriend them, you can block them. You don't have to go to these events. For example, the pickup artist that wants to come to Canada, you don't have to go to his event if you don't want to hear it. It sounds like the social justice warriors aren't satisfied to not hear it themselves. They want to keep other people from hearing it. And it seems like this right to not be offended, the end result will be nothing but a bunch of mutes in society.
I actually doubt that it's that personal, their right to not be offended. I see it as a morality war, where they're actually out there as advocates and champions for other people's hurt feelings, to show that they're so caring. They're more moral than anybody else. And that gets into their self-identifications now. Include, well, I'm a white person. I'm like cisgendered. They start listing off all of their privileges, you know, another air quote there, so-called privileges. Privileges nowadays are actually disadvantages. And they do this in a really, really complex morality war game to show that, well, I'm actually so moral that I'm going to recognize my own bad side of, you know, my own inequality in even having a conversation with you. So how are you going to get more moral than that, right?
Let me drop a C.S. Lewis quote, because this will apply to these moral busybodies. Of all tyrannies, a tyranny exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It may be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity at some point may be satiated. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own consciences. These people have an idea of how the world should work and how everybody should act, and they will not spare any amount of violence to impose that upon others. So, rather than their own moral inferiority, they're trying to impose their own moral superiority on others.
There's a general denial of the dark side of human nature too, which I don't really find all that useful. I think that it's important to realize that we have morbid ideas, that we have morbid thoughts, and because when you don't recognize that, then you suppress it. And I think that, like, my daughter was fascinated with cemeteries when she was about 5 or 6 years old, and did we tell her that that was not a good thing to think about? No, we let her go to cemeteries. You know what, after about 7-8 months she got over it. She didn't care anymore.
Well, define this dark human nature.
Well, that's the thing, is what's dark. It's really just, I find what people call dark, what people call evil, and what people try to fight against is usually just their own subconscious. That we are mortal creatures, aware of our own looming deaths. And this brings up a lot of problems in our psyche. So we fetishize this and we project this onto other people. And then we try to destroy the evil in other people, instead of actually just recognizing that we have morbid thoughts, that sometimes you do things that aren't pleasant, and sometimes you think about things that make you feel really bad. And if you accept that, and if you're not afraid of it, it's not that big of a problem. But when you don't accept it, it's huge. And then you have to fight somebody to try and keep all these thoughts away, to keep them at bay.
Yeah. I see these social justice warrior clowns as kind of like the crabs in the bucket. That, you know, rather than let somebody else be happy or do something, they will do everything that they can to pull them back down. And it's unreasonable.
But to block somebody from entering your country because they're saying something you don't like, doesn't that aggrandize them? Really? Doesn't it grant them way more power than they actually have?
Oh, it does. And it, as I mentioned, the increase in the brutalism, because a lot of the folks that get, the self-described brutalists, they probably went a lot further than they would have looking to offend. So it's quite possible that this guy that wanted to come into Canada, was he blocked, or did he sneak in, or did he crawl under the barbed wire? What happened?
Well, I think that their petition just didn't have enough time to take effect before before he landed on ground Canada.
Well, he
probably
certainly
promoted him very well.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it was a great career move for him, because this is going to get people interested and they're going to want to see more. It's a Streisand effect. So, congratulations, social justice warriors. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, there's some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you arms listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
The end of the show. That's so sad.
Give us a little redemption in the third act, Diana.
All right. So, well, I was watching this video. It's available on YouTube. Dr. Walter Block. He's an anarcho-capitalist economist. He was talking about freedom of speech in reference to a book he wrote called Defending the Undefendable. Right? Or
yeah. Yep, that's it.
And, yeah. So he was saying that, like I was mentioning, you can't really see how people will act when they're acting within a society that's not freedom-based. You can't really know what they'll be like. So he's saying that when you have these laws against libel and slander, that if you remove those, when they exist, if somebody says something, makes a claim about somebody else that's negative, that slanders their reputation, that they, you don't own your reputation. Your reputation is only in the minds of other people, right? And that these laws don't really work. But ultimately, what he was saying was that when you have those laws in place, if you don't have a claim of slander or libel against somebody, everybody assumes it's true. If you remove the laws against libel and slander, he says that the nature of people would be they would automatically question when they hear things. Now, whether or not that's true, I think that's an important thing to instill on people. When you hear, because people will gossip, right? We all, talk about our day, we talk about our experiences with other people. But when you hear something negative about somebody, your automatic reaction should be to try to hear the other side of it. And I think that is actually something that would come out in people when they recognize that they're dealing with real people in a real world and you're not protected by laws, that you have to learn how to govern yourself, right?
Sure.
Well, I think the reason that many people do not govern themselves is because, one, they have the option not to, and also, in many cases, it's illegal to. Just earlier this evening, I was receiving messages from somebody that was telling me stuff about a person that I know and that I've met in person. So I was, kind of wondering, what in the heck is this going on? Because I know this guy, and, I wasn't really buying it. But maybe it's true, but I really don't think it is. But because, I know this guy, because this person is a friend, I have a vested interest in figuring out what is right or what is wrong.
I know what you're talking about. I've been in that situation.
Yeah. So I think if this person sent me a message of somebody that I did not know in real life and did not spend any time with, I don't know. I might take it with a grain of salt. I might, believe it or whatever. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. What I said was, you're not just talking to me about a story. You're talking to me about somebody I know, and I know this person. What you're telling me doesn't match what I know about them. And the person said, what must you think about me to not believe me? I was like, well, that's not really the issue, is it? And mm-hmm. But the importance is how you respond to things, to gossip and to negative input. And we all like to talk trash when somebody's upset us. But, you know, when you think about human nature, you got to recognize sometimes somebody just needs to talk trash and get it out of their system. And they're going to be totally fine with that person the next day. But if you don't self-govern, then it becomes bigger issues and that turns into group, you know, vilifying other groups and vilifying, you know, specific people and silencing them through social ostracization and things like that. Social ostracization is the proposed alternative to law, right? But we don't really have a lot of control over that because we get caught up in gossip. And I think self-governing is actually a really important thing for people to learn to prepare themselves for a non-governed world.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about that book, Defending the Undefendable, is Walter Block defends the blackmailer. And it's on the grounds of, at least a blackmailer will keep quiet for a price, where the gossip won't shut up for nothing.
Nice. See, that's what happens when you face the dark side. Mm-hmm.
Well, the blackmailer also provides a valuable service to the social good, so to speak. Because if a person can be blackmailed, that may have a greater impact on whether they're going to engage in activity that they could be blackmailed for.
There you go.
Legalize all the things.
Everything.
It was a pleasure.
Great
James,
show.
You and I will be back next week, and maybe we'll break out Choke Chain Lou and Just Doing Their Jobs, Jim.
Yeah.